Welcome to the game.
It's a beautiful thing.
With Mark Duffield.
By golly gosh.
The son of a darkened shearer and a self-described ball-playing jack-of-all-trades.
We shouldn't be surprised, should we?
Who lit up footy fields in the southwest before becoming WA's preeminent AFL scribe.
My goodness.
And Glenn Quarterman.
Wow-wee.
A proud Victorian parked permanently in the west who would have played 300 AFL games if not for his incredibly small hands.
Goodness gracious me.
Together, they are Duff and Quarters.
You know who.
And this is your favourite footy podcast.
It's unbelievable.
Hello, everybody. It's Thursday. Time for the second edition this week of the Duff and Quarters podcast, starring Josh Garlop, our star producer and sound effects man, Golden Tonsils Reddings, who's now being recognised in the public as Golden Tonsils Reddings, which we're very, very proud of.
Welcome aboard, mate.
Small hands Quartermain over there in the corner, and myself, son of a darkened shearer, Mark Duffield. All right, we are brought to you by Tab Touch. Please gamble responsibly, but you're allowed to get closer to the AFL action with Tab Touch. Call Gamblers Helpline, please, on 1-800-858-858 if you run into any difficulties.
Why are you looking at me when you say all that stuff about Tab Touch? Now, I enjoy a multi here and there, but that's life. We push on. Now, Quarters.
One of the great theatres of my life is going out with you, having a few beers, and just watching you
ride the wave of
$30, $40. You go up, you go down, you go up, you go down, you lay off, you
don't
go
up. Don't have too many vices, but I'll tell you what, that is secondary importance, Quarters. Don't know where to turn first.
Okay, well, let's look at where we are with this AFL fixture. Right now, to describe it as a mess would be a euphemism, to be honest. It's just crazy. So tonight's game between Freo and Geelong going ahead. Geelong negative test so far. If that continues, it goes ahead at Optus Stadium.
And as far as we know, that's with crowd.
That's with crowd at this stage. Richmond, Friday night, Richmond v Brisbane at the MCG. As far as we know, still going ahead. Saturday, GWS v Sydney was to be played at Ballarat. Unfortunately for them, it's been moved from Ballarat to Queensland. So they both got on a plane this morning to head up to play that game in Queensland. There is obviously 11 cases in Vic yesterday, another couple today from the MCG game last Saturday in which Geelong played.
So one out of the MCC members, one sitting close to the original case out of the out of the ground.
Gold Coast v Western Bulldogs was to be played at Metricon anyway. The Dogs got out last night, so they got out Wednesday night early in anticipation of more spread. Melbourne v Hawthorn, MCG at this stage still going ahead. St Kilda v Port Adelaide still planning to fly in for that game at Marvel Stadium, but all four teams are bracing for change. Sunday, this is where it gets confusing. Sunday, North Melbourne v Essendon planning to fly out today to Queensland to reschedule that game up there. But at this stage, at the moment, Collingwood v Carlton still going ahead at the MCG, bracing for change. And Adelaide v West Coast at Adelaide Oval, expecting that to go ahead at the Adelaide Oval. However, there are a couple of infections in Adelaide, so I guess we've got to say bracing for change.
It's as clear as a COVID cluster at the moment. Quarters, thanks for confusing me even further. But it begs the question, the AFL seemed determined this late in the season not to relent and go into any hub situation. Well, and to be fair to them, where do they go?
Duff's got a great question here.
Well, to me, if some clubs are having to flee Melbourne because it's considered high risk now, why aren't they all fleeing, and why aren't some of them going to Tasmania? Was there not a window of opportunity to get into Tasmania, maybe put four clubs in Tasmania, maybe get a few games out of the way there, you know, get some clubs over here, maybe get a few games out of the way here, and maybe get closer to the end of the season?
I can only assume the last time this happened, the Tasmanian government put the hand up and said, you're not coming in. Maybe they fear, that has not been released yet. The government has had no response, the Tasmanian government. Maybe they've said that. I'm not sure.
And also for WA, there are people saying, let's get the footy here. But we know Mark McGowan is liable to drop crowds and put a stop on everything at a drop of a hat, which is his prerogative. So Tasmania looms as an obvious choice. Queensland again.
A couple of spreads there.
Queensland have at least got, if you putting it on an equal basis, Queensland's got three venues that they can play footy at. We've got one.
A couple of cases there now.
Yeah, true, and that can change from day. But, yeah, we're running out of places to to have any sort of surety moving forward. And we none of us have the answer. And, of course, we're not privy to the conversations and the discussions between governments and the AFL.
And it's easy for us to say from a distance. And what I do know about the AFL and the way they work this, they just work scenarios, and their absolute priority is getting the season played. So it's not about, you know, favouring one state over another state. It's basically how do we make sure we can get the season played. So they will view what they've done so far as their best case scenario to minimise the chances of the season stalling or having to pause for a considerable period of time.
If they can struggle through this week and they need to take a break, got the Olympics coming up. There might be a little window for them to have a couple of weeks off and look after the broadcaster.
They've refused to do that, though, haven't they? Refused to press pause when they've had, you've mentioned a couple of times, stuff. It just feels like they're determined, a bit like the NRL who've moved their whole competition up to Queensland to go down that path. It just feels like they are looking for every option, which is fair enough.
But the window's squeezing. If it becomes untenable, then you have to look at the option of last year, which was that. They did have a little hiatus for a while. So I'm not saying I hope we don't, but that could happen.
Well, I reckon two clubs that might be hoping that happens is Richmond and West Coast. Give them time to pause and regroup a little bit.
So how's that game still going ahead tomorrow night at the MCG?
Yeah, no, that's the one that baffles me.
Richmond, Brisbane.
I mean, given they've flown other teams out of Victoria to get them out ahead of possible border lockdowns, I'm a bit baffled as to how the hell that one goes ahead.
So the alternative is to play that game at the Gabba, you're saying?
Geez, Brisbane would be happy. Record not too flash at the MCG.
Well, I'm just wondering, if there were no border restrictions in Tasmania, getting into Tasmania, we saw Hawthorn and Essendon playing Launceston in front of a bumper crowd a few weeks back. And it looked like a different place, didn't it, Lonnie, with the UTAS stadium absolutely full to the brim of patrons. You know, you bring in a marquee team like Richmond, maybe you get something like that. Don't forget, Richmond has produced Tasmania's produced some great Richmond players.
It has,
Royce indeed. Hart, obviously Jack Revolt out of the current crop. So they would have a following down there, I would have thought.
They do have a following there, huge
but the
following.
Bottom line is, again, like last year, whichever team and teams can adjust to what's being put in front of them may well thrive over the next month. And thankfully, from a Dockers perspective, tonight's game at Optus Stadium going ahead with fans, because we know they've had the Starlight Purple Haze game, which is one of their two big games of the season with regards to financially creating some revenue. That's one they want to get back inside their budget. And tonight goes ahead, albeit with a caveat of concern around it. But yeah, there's the teams that are able to shift like they did last year may well end up finding themselves deep in September.
Once again, we say to our friends in Victoria, New South Wales, all the best. We're thinking of you. We all have friends and family over there. I certainly do. And it's not a great situation. You know, we're very lucky over here. Desert one side, ocean the other.
We have experienced lockdown. In fact, Skeet and I were trying to remember what our longest period of lockdown was, and it's not even memorable enough.
A couple of weeks, I think, just at tops.
And that was right at the start.
Yeah.
And then we've had brief ones where Premier McGowan has gone hard, gone early, and basically it's been a week, and then we've come out onto,
I think, West Australians now are prepared to do that. I think we can see the reward at the end of a very short, sharp shutdown.
Yeah.
We're all almost like, yep, fine, let's do it.
Absolutely. And it's kind of being – he's kind of being vindicated a little bit the further along this goes, isn't it?
Not kind of. I think he's been vindicated.
Completely vindicated. Yeah.
I think so.
All right. So if we're betting people, what are we betting on? They're going to get this round out of the way by the looks of it. What are we betting on? Are we betting on hubs? Are we betting on season pause? Are we betting on this clearing enough for us to continue as planned next
week?
I'm
betting on season pause because I think with the hubs, I think it's the last – option for them, and I think the AFLPA players don't want hubs. There was all sorts of catastrophe coming out of hubs last year. They don't want hubs. So if we have to have them, we have them, but I'm betting on a season pause.
Skeet?
I think a season pause is probably the most logical, but I just don't think the AFL will go down that path unless they absolutely have to. The hubs situation, we're not going to see anything like we saw last season because of the time involved, so it's going to be a short, sharper hub if that's required. So perhaps that's an option for them. And we know that half the competition in how many more? Another six games, aren't there? So there's a bit to be played out. But I'd still favour the fact they will push on as long as possible without pausing or hubs.
So what about they played a 17-round season last year. What happens if it gets messy and they decide to have a 17-round season again this year and just get the finals played and get it out of the way?
Well, we spoke about last year about what would be the limit of a credible, legitimate season.
And it's 17.
And I think we're at that now. And I think it was forced upon us. I think the greater good, I think the mass would agree, wouldn't they? I mean, it's not going to be – it's going to suit some clubs, it's not going to suit others, but this is COVID.
It was earlier in the season, though, they pulled the trigger on that, and now it feels a bit more contentious.
Having said that, where we're at right now, I mean, you feel like the top six are settled and they deserve to be there. So I wouldn't be too uncomfortable with it if it was right now we're playing finals.
Yeah, well speaking as a Fremantle boy, beat Geelong tonight and then call an end to the season as far as I'm concerned.
You know, you're in the eight. You've worked hard to get there, so you deserve to be there. Simple as that.
It would be nice to beat another top eight team, I think.
You might get the chance in the finals.
Well, they do get the chance tonight, so we'll see how they go. All right, so let's talk local teams, guys. Let's start with the game tonight, Fremantle versus Geelong. And this is a big month for Fremantle, isn't it? This is almost like the diagnosis of exactly where they're at as a team. I think we all quite like the method. We all see the shortcomings with manpower every now and again. But they do need to start taking scalps around or above themselves on the ladder.
Absolutely. And they get their chance tonight with Geelong's forward line, not decimated, but certainly rolling out. We know that Jeremy Cameron's sideline. It's a game that they can feel a bit more comfortable about, I think, with Sean Darcy's dominance in the ruck, as it has been. That's where they can get in control and perhaps feed their midfield. And Joel Selwood returns after being managed. That's an important in for obvious reasons. But, yeah, this is their not their grand final, but this is the test to show us where they are at. You can beat Hawthorn in Launceston, which is no small achievement, albeit the Hawks are struggling. But to beat a top eight side, in fact, they're probably a top three or top four side, let's be honest. They're looking at top two.
They're top four side.
But they're looking at top two. That's what they are eyeing that off. So it's going to be fascinating to see how the Dockers respond to that.
I think, you know, there's one player. There's one Achilles heel. If you pick holes in all of the teams that are challenging, if you want to look at Geelong, you look at their ruck department. And you look at the form of the opposition ruckman, Sean Darcy, arguably the most informed ruckman in the competition at the moment. Oh, how they would love to have him, you know, boy from the Western Districts. But I think he had a shocker against them last time. He's got a point to prove. And, you know, you back him. His form's so good at the moment. I just think this is a great opportunity for Fremantle. And I think, I'm not saying if Geelong lose tonight, they're gone. But I'll add another element to it. Now, so Geelong will come in here, they don't know what they're going back to. They don't know where they're going. So that just adds another little element of uncertainty in the minds of the Geelong players.
Yeah, although they went to Adelaide, remember, just flew in, flew out, got the job done against Port Adelaide. So they're accustomed to it to some degree. You're right, though. There has to be a bit of a mental struggle or a mental question being asked of Geelong. Not that they won't overcome that, but it's a challenge that they have to overcome, whereas the Dockers, at this point at least, pretty much as per usual.
Boys, breaking news.
Yep.
Serge Silvagni, father of Stephen, passed away this morning, aged 83. One of the greats of the Carlton Football Club, one of the great families of the Carlton Football Club, of course. A player in that famous 1970 grand final victory over Collingwood. Bow-legged. Yes. Like Sauce.
And like the son of Sauce.
And Jack to a similar degree. A sad loss for Carlton.
I'm very sad to hear that, but what a great life. What a pretty good knock. Certainly one of the great revered Carlton players of the late 60s and early 70s. Obviously his progeny has just driven that club for a long time. My thoughts go to the Silvagni family and actually to all Carlton supporters because a much loved figure at that club.
Yeah, you summed it up really well. I have to say, I didn't see him play, but
neither did I, Skeet. No, I'm pleased to say that.
No, but we look back and see the records and see the numbers and see the impact he's had on the club, as you say, and it's just been first class.
So a two-time premiership player, club captain in 1964, leading goal kicker in 1959. You could have got me on that one.
59.
Victorian representative in 1962 and 1963. Team of the century member. 239 games. Team of the century, yeah. And obviously, Stephen Silvani, fullback of the century in the AFL team of the century. So
I'm guessing you probably got a Guernsey in the Italian team of the century as well.
I would imagine. As did Stephen. And Jack, I have to say, starting to come of age,
isn't he? Playing that really important role in the forward line.
And he's had some injury issues himself. And you're right, he's probably one of those players that are underrated and now starting to find his feet at the level. It can take 2, 3, 4 years, and he's certainly... He's given the Blues something, and we're talking about other games later, but having Charlie Curnow beside him potentially this weekend, it gives them a real boost, doesn't
Pretty
it?
Pretty hard too for young Jack. You know, you're not talking about one shadow. You're talking about the Silvani shadow. Very, very, you know, he's got to live up to that.
Yes, he does. All right, so let's tip on the Fremantle-Geelong game. Geelong $1.80 with Tab Touch, Fremantle $2.05 with Tab Touch. So almost not far off being even money. I'm going for the Cats. I give the Dockers a sniff.
I'm with you. The weather will be important. Bit of rain around today, meant to clear tonight, so that would certainly help Frio. But I'm going to go with Geelong just because I think they're a little bit ahead of them at this point, and they've got to keep the momentum going now. Feels like, you keep saying this, Skeet, I think you're right, feels like they're in one gear and we're just waiting for them to pull the lever and go into that next gear.
Yeah, I'm not sure it'll happen tonight because I think Fremantle will really press them. And I guess my tip of Geelong is based a bit on what we saw last year, albeit it was terrible conditions, hopefully not as bad. But just that contested footy in the wet duff, I just felt that the bigger bodies and having Selwood back in there, Dangerfield, et cetera, that they might just have enough around the stoppages, around the contest, to nullify what Fremantle can come up with.
More breaking news, boys. Victoria going into a snap lockdown as a result of the COVID clusters. So we'll just go through and try and work out what that actually means.
Well, it means
no crowds for a start. If the Richmond-Brisbane game goes ahead tomorrow night at the MCG, it means no crowds. So,
begs the question, as we spoke about at the start, about these games are still going ahead in Melbourne. I presume they are obliged to, even though this lockdown has come, they would have known it was on its way. So fascinating that some teams have gone, some teams have stayed.
Well, let's wait and see what happens for the rest of today to play out, because I'm not sure if we're going to remain with these fixtures. So let's just see what happens.
So it starts from midnight tonight, and the conditions of it are still to be decided, but apparently a lockdown of some degree is inevitable, according to the Herald Sun. Okay. So, all right, so let's move on to that game. Richmond versus Brisbane tomorrow night, which we're wondering why it's still being played at the MCG. But what do we think, boys?
Well, great news, first of all, Cordis, that the second mid-season draft to be taken.
Yes.
Matty Parker gets his chance, really good form in the VFL, and it's be folly to suggest, you'd think, that he'd have the same sort of impact that Marlon Pickett did when he first arrived. Well, Marlon's, I think, was a little bit more advanced, I believe. In
Matty Parker's played AFL.
He has.
I didn't mind him actually at St Kilda, so I've got no reason. He's that sort of a player. He's an impact player. Doesn't necessarily play four quarters, but he can hurt you in a 10-15 minute period. So I've got no doubt he can. He can have an impact.
Yeah.
So Brisbane $1.47 with Tab Touch. Richmond is $2.70. Obviously, that comes off four consecutive losses and some key absences and some pretty ordinary form. But the Lions come off a game when they've lost Eric Hipwood, when they've coughed up a game we expected them to win against St Kilda. Do you give the Tigers a toehold in this
game? I do. I'm picking them, Duff.
Picking
I'm going against every bit of logic I have in my body. Look, there's a couple of reasons here. I'm not big on milestones normally. It is Jack Riewoldt's 300th. There's a lot of warriors out of that Richmond side. But I don't like Brisbane's form at the G. They've really struggled there, which intrigues me because it's not a hugely different shape to the Gabba, but it intrigues me why their form has been so poor there. I'm really interested to see how they go without Hipwood. It's going to have to be a relayed responsibility onto other players. Joe Danaher will have to step up. He's been okay this year in patches, but I think he's a big loss, Hipwood. I really feel for him. I'm going to go for the Tigers, who are, despite the fact they've lost their last four to the Eagles, Saints, Suns and Magpies. You wouldn't have picked that, would you, at the start of the year? I'm just going completely against form in this game.
Yep. Well, the MCG you mentioned, but bear in mind, no crowd there on Friday night, so that maybe becomes a bit more of a haven for the Lions and lacks that bit of intimidation that, that the Richmond bring when they've got their fans. Not that they're going to be turning out in huge numbers the way they're travelling, but yeah, I've stuck with Brisbane. I'm going to give them another chance. Their loss on the Gold Coast was unexpected. It was un-Brisbane-like, may I say. They have been, outside of last week, probably one of the top two or three form sides of the past 2 months. So I still think they'll be looking at top four, top two. I'm tipping Brisbane on the basis that I think they can arrest that poor form at the MCG.
What I should have added, sorry, Duff, was that there's a couple of really important fitness tests here. One of them's Nankervis. I just feel he's been a real difference for them, his absence. So if he gets, if he plays, I think they'll be a bit of a different look to that side. I think Edwards and Lambert and Charles are also having fitness tests, so a couple of important.
They're a bit short on Ruckman, aren't they? Really?
They are, yeah.
Well, Nankervis is important, isn't he? He's kind of like Sean Darcy is to Fremantle. Like, he's big and he's robust, and opposition midfielders have to step around him a little bit. And you get the feeling that their surge and chaos game has a bit more oomph to it when Nankervis is playing in the ruck. Even though Chole is more mobile, and therefore you would think he would be able to contribute to the surge, but Nankervis's grunt, I think, is quite important to them.
I've got to say, watching Chole at first sight at the Optus Stadium Dreamtime game in that first half, you thought, gee, this young player's, I mean, he took the game on and he won so much footy. You thought, maybe there is a replacement straight away, but of course he's fallen away. And
he's young,
so he's going to have those moments. But you're right, Nankervis, one of those players that you think, well, he's a bit of a journeyman, and but he's very important to them. So you're right, Quarters. If they get the services of Nankervis, their chances, I think, rise substantially. If not, I still think Brisbane, there has to be a response after last week. I'd be surprised if they don't come out tomorrow night and show something.
And I guess the other thing is, if given that Richmond, well, in one hand, they coped well in the hub last year, but they didn't like the hub. If they're starting to think, geez, we might be going back into hubs, it'll be interesting to see how that affects their mindset as well.
Are you picking?
I'm tipping Brisbane. Yeah, I expect a response. Mind you, we've been expecting a response from West Coast for about a month now.
I've got a feeling I've just handed you two blokes it.
Wow. No, that's the reverse, Mark, and we don't like that, Quarters, because that doesn't sit well with me.
No happiness insurance on this one, Quarters. Thank you very much. All right, so moving on, Gold Coast versus Western Bulldogs. So this was to be played at Metricon, will be played at Metricon. Bulldogs flying out of Melbourne early to make sure that they get there. Dogs, $1.25. Gold Coast, $4. Gold Coast coming off a good win, and the Bulldogs nearly needing to rebound after a disappointing loss.
I'm pretty confident the Bulldogs will rebound here. I think that was a bit of an outlier last week, albeit Sydney's a bit of a litmus test for everyone at the moment, aren't they? So a Gold Coast, I'd love to see them win. That'd be three in a row and a couple of big sculpts. That would be huge for that club. I just don't think, albeit it's at their home ground, I just think the Dogs have got too much to lose to drop this one.
Well, if Bontempelli, we agree, is the most important player to the Bulldogs, Aaron Norton number two?
I reckon Aaron Norton's the most important player to the Bulldogs.
There you go. Debate can be had either way. But either way, you've got Norton hopefully back into the side after that concussion. Yep. So he comes back in, presumably. That gives them just that, straightens them up, target. And, there's an ale. Bontempelli, you think, is the guy to lead them. But Aaron Norton's significance to that
team. And everyone else in that forward line. It's important to everyone else. There's a flow-on effect to everyone else.
So I accept that Bontempelli is their best player. Mm. But if you look at where they're strong and deep in the midfield. So if Bontempelli doesn't play, they're still putting out an incredibly strong and deep midfield. But without Norton in attack, Josh Bruce is kind of like all care, no responsibility. Very good as the second or third target. Not so great as the go-to guy. You know, the other guy who's really important to them is going to be Steph Martin, because Tim English is still, as good a player as he is, he's a better forward than a ruckman at the moment.
Yeah.
Agree.
It was a good pickup, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Really good pickup.
Absolutely. Yeah, smart recruiting. All right, so we're all on the Dogs. Melbourne versus Hawthorn. $1.06 to Melbourne on Tab Touch. Hawthorn are $9 quarters. Your boy's just,
you know what,
getting out further.
No,
and further. No, don't. Don't go there.
Just
don't
have
go.
A sneaky five.
Well, Giants out, so there's another loss. The queue is in the rack, I reckon, now. It's been for a while.
What it is now. No, I'm picking Melbourne.
And by margin.
End of story.
They should be winning by margin.
I think it's going to be a pretty bleak finish to the year for Hawthorn. In fact, I wouldn't mind it if we drew the curtain on round 17 right now.
That being said, as a Hawthorn supporter,
do I want to finish last?
You're not out of the realms of picking up your first wooden spoon since the 60s.
So I wouldn't mind having a bit of a look at Jason Horne, who's the South Australian mid forward number, who you know touted as the number one draft pick. Darcy's son as well is a bit taller. But Horne, they reckon he's a bit of a Isaac Heaney clone, sort of midfielder who goes forward and takes a really good grip. Apparently he's a bit of a brute who has had 2 years in the sandful. So there's your answer. Wouldn't mind having a look at him.
So whoever has that number one pick, just digressing a little bit, they're going to read out Dacos first.
Yes, and then he goes
and,
to Collingwood.
And challenge Collingwood to match the bid. Mm-hmm. Then they're probably going to read out Darcy.
Yeah.
And challenge the Dogs to match the bid. And then they're probably going to read out Horne.
Yeah. Oh, not probably. They'll read out Horne.
Yeah, he seems. Few West Australians in the mix for top 10, which we might get back to talking to Skeety about that, having sort of covered some Colts footy and some PSA footy as to who they might be. All right. Do we need to spend a lot of time on this one, Melbourne?
No, not really. The only thing I'll say is I look forward to the continued presence of Ben Brown. They really need just to see him grow into that team, because without that real key forward target, I don't think they can win a flag. So one of either him or Wiedemann has to stand up.
Yeah, but cast my mind back to earlier this season when they met at the MCG and Hawthorn pushed them for three quarters. Then Maxi Gorn and co got rolling and they won by the best
mate,
part of
there's
seven
no defence.
Goals.
Hawthorn has no defence at the moment, really. So this is a week to get your confidence up if you're Ben Brown.
And your percentage.
Yeah, that's
for
right.
Melbourne.
Yep.
So Melbourne, the trifecta, not too hard, that one. St Kilda versus Port Adelaide. St Kilda, $2.02 coming in quite a bit. Port Adelaide, $1.82. Quarters, you still expect this one to be played in Melbourne?
Well, I'm not sure where it's going to be played, to be honest. Look, it could be played in front of no crowds. Port Adelaide is still anticipating flying in to Melbourne. St Kilda's form's been good, but look, I'm going to pick Port here. Number one, they're not in the eight, so Port should be able to get the job done. And it's just a crucial game for them. They dropped one they wanted to win last week. I know St Kilda's form's good. They play much better with that tandem ruck duo, but I'm going to back Port here.
Yeah, Luke Dunstan's been pretty good still, hasn't he, for the Saints. And we've mentioned all year the Ryder-Marshall combination.
Steele.
I'm talking about the – but having those two big boys together on the park at once, it makes such a difference to St Kilda. But Port Adelaide, I tipped them to win the flag pre-season. I've not off the bandwagon, but I'm trailing and not keen to jump back on just yet. They haven't shown me enough against the better sides. Mind you, St Kilda are not one of the better sides in my mind this season. Their form is good. They still fancy their chances to make the eight. I think Port Adelaide at Marvel, if it's played there, I don't think that's an issue for them.
Not one of the better sides this season, but are they one of the better sides right now? You know,
the last 2 weeks they have been.
Victories over Richmond and Brisbane.
Brisbane particularly is a win.
It's a great win.
They're good wins.
Yeah, they are.
I like them. I'm going to tip Port, I have to say. But Port Adelaide, geez, they do shake your confidence a little bit, don't they? I mean, their record against the top end of the ladder isn't great. They were very good at beating up against the teams below them on the ladder, but how far below them on the ladder is St Kilda now in terms of real form? There may not be much in this. This is a real credibility test for Port Adelaide, I think.
And you'd also think that Butters, we've talked up him all year, and still Robbie Gray sideline, that leaves you a little bit uneasy, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And Dersmer, where's Dersmer at? He's pretty close to coming back, but he's not back yet. Is that right, I think?
Yep.
So they're big outs for Port Adelaide, and we've probably underestimated the impact that's had on them at times this year, because they have fallen away a bit, haven't they? Well, we had them top four at the start of the year. They're more like top six or seven now.
They're about sixth.
Yeah.
For me, there's a sixth and then there's seventh.
And they look like the outlier in the sixth too.
They do.
Like Sydney's gone past them and they could easily find themselves, you know, right down the bottom end of the eight, just playing in an away elimination final.
And losing games at the Adelaide Oval, that to me tells us a little bit of a tale about against the better sides. Geelong, obviously, last week against Port Adelaide beaten by Melbourne on the Thursday night. Better sides at home and getting beaten pretty convincingly in the end. That's a concern. But hopefully, if you've tipped Port, they'll show something on Saturday night. But yeah, right, form team almost in the past 2 or 3 weeks has been St Kilda. And they've got – it's amazing, even if you're an average list or you've got players that have been down, but Zach Jones comes back into it and you've got Jack Steele, as you said, they have got a bit of momentum and you can't discount that.
So – one of the talking points at Port Adelaide has been Todd Marshall in, Peter Adams out. Should Peter Adams be playing ahead of Todd Marshall? Should they be playing as their three tall targets in attack? Charlie Dixon, Mitch Georgiades, who continues to show a bit.
Hang last week.
Well, he played a pretty good quarter last week.
And hang on Maxi Gawn.
Yep, he's a good player, Mitch Georgiades, and going to get better. Mm. And maybe Adams is the forward ruck to support Scotty Lysette. That might be the way for them to go this week, given that the two genuine ruck charges for St Kilda.
That forward line seems like they've mucked around with it a lot. They just can't quite get it right.
I'm not sure what Marshall gives them, because he's not a strong marking target. Very talented player, but he's slightly built. You know, he's not super quick, so he's kind of neither one thing nor the other, isn't he? And maybe they're better with Adams, the bigger target, very athletic, can help Scotty Lysette out in the ruck a bit. Maybe Scotty Lysette can push forward a bit. Don't forget Scotty Lysette played a little bit as a forward early in his career, so he's not completely clueless down there. I do think they need to fight fire with fire a little bit with the Saints ruckman.
Yep. And I think we're talking about Port Adelaide in those terms in round 18, it means they're probably not right in the premiership conversation at the moment. They might well improve in the last 6 weeks, but I still feel
plenty of time.
Plenty of time.
If you can get it right.
But they need to
get moving.
But you're
right about it is the fire with fire is a definite this week.
They're running out of time, I think. You know, they've kind of lost their way a little bit, I think. They're still a good team, but they're not a great team. All right, Collingwood versus Carlton.
Did we overlook GWS Sydney? Have we done GWS Sydney?
I'm looking at the Tab Touch app here. That might have been taken off the books because
of GWS v Sydney was Saturday, was to be at Mars Stadium in Ballarat. I'm sure they're happy it's been moved up to they've flown up to Queensland. We're not sure where it's going to be yet, but I'm sure that they've got the singlets on now and the jumpers are off.
You know what they should have done? They should have put, because obviously they got on the plane together, and similar setup to West Coast Fremantle. One side of the aisle.
Yeah.
They should have put Toby Green next to Tommy Papley just to see what would have happened.
They would have got on like a house on fire, two annoying little
nuts.
Nuts. I love them both. I reckon they're great.
I love them both.
At least one of those in your side.
Oh, yeah.
That being said, I mean, irrespective of where it's been played, you can't overlook what Sydney's done in the past month. And they are just playing good footy. I mean, when Nick Riewoldt comes out and says they can win the flag, that's a fairly good endorsement.
I'm not quite ready to say.
No,
I'm picking Sydney in this game. I don't think they can win the flag just yet. I think they're developing into that. But I certainly think they can do some serious damage in September.
A mate of mine has a theory on GWS. It's Jake Nile from The Age. And very thoughtful man about footy, often too thoughtful. But Jake has a theory that GWS plays at the level of their opponent. GWS beat Sydney last time out. Mm. I mean, they got him late, a bit of Josh Kelly brilliance late in the game. But what do you think about that, guys? Is GWS capable of lifting to the level of Sydney and maybe producing an upset here?
Absolutely.
It's a really interesting theory. I hadn't considered that before. Now you've raised it, I look back at their history and it's quite true, isn't it?
Yeah.
They do play to the level of their opponent. They're more than capable of winning this game. I just have a lot of faith in Sydney's form at the moment.
Yeah. And
playing with a great cohesion, Sydney.
The Giants are a tough team to read. Oh, really hard. So they beat Melbourne at the MCG, really gutsy victory. And then they end up being beaten by the Gold Coast Suns, who have improved, but gee whiz.
A bit like an Arabic logarithm, aren't they? Just inscrutable, incredibly hard to read.
A bit like, yes, I won't say. Hello to Mrs. Redding. So.
A bit like the Bible, hard to read.
Yes.
I'm going to tip Sydney, but I do give – I mean, I'm – one thing I'll say about Leon Cameron, after watching them play here in round two against Fremantle, we thought they were cooked.
And we
thought he was cooked. So to be able to do what they've done this season and steady and pull off some great wins and – I think in most games, play a better brand of footy than we expected them to play after that round two game. And even last week against Gold Coast, guys, they're playing in Ballarat where there's a wind whistling around the ground. The game was a bit of a crapshoot, if you know what I mean. Like, there were stats that mattered, but the only stats that really mattered was how many of your inside 50s you could somehow manufacture goals out of. And Gold Coast did really well. They were able to manufacture the extra goal that got them the win. Well done. Kudos to them. But I'm not sure what you make of it in terms of GWS's season, apart from maybe it was just one of those games they had to find a way to win and they didn't.
Is this Canelio's back, isn't he, this week?
He's fit again, yes.
He's fit again. So is he available, which is probably a good time to introduce our juicy topic of the week. just
talk about how
you've got Josh. We finally got him.
It was all a dream.
Juicy.
Just checking his agility.
Mate, I think you've upset him more than when you used to say Barry White.
Show the dexterity of a feral cat there, the moves to get that board going. I've raised it as a topic because he comes back in. He is the GWS captain. Of course, Toby Green has been the GWS captain. Who captains the team?
Well, that is a good time to launch our juicy topic of the week. Brought to you by Biggie Juice, topic of the week. Brought to you by Thirsty Camel Bottle Shops. Well done, Quarters. You've caught us all with our pants down there.
I like to do that every now and then.
Well played.
But to answer your question, Quarters, I think the captain has to come back and
he does,
be the captain.
Does he captain them next year?
Well, that's a discussion for the end of the season, I think.
So usually the players pick the captain, right? So it's going to be interesting to see which way the Giants go on this. The interesting thing about Toby Green is that if you're looking for a player who leads by deeds, clearly that is Toby Green. I suspect that Cornelio would be a great talker around the group, but it appears to weigh on his performance, doesn't it?
Yeah, and also, so around the club, you have to bear that in mind, what Cornelio brings to young players, to those that are struggling with their form or fitness. All those little things which we don't see may well be a factor. But you're right, in terms of on-field presence and what the team has done when he's led, Toby Green has to be considered, if not next year, certainly a future captain.
Well,
club.
I think it's no slight on Stephen Coniglio, by the way, Stephen Coniglio. I think he's a great player and a great leader. It's just that I think what you give Toby that extra responsibility, and I think our big critique on Toby over the years, and rightly so, has been his, you know, he's a bit out in the footy field, he can do the wrong thing too often and let his side down. I think we've seen a bit of a more disciplined Toby Green since he's had the captaincy. Do you agree with that?
Yep.
Yeah,
so
I think
it helps him.
Focused,
I think it helps elevate him more than it does anything for Keneally. I think it's a good role for him to have. I just think going forward he's a logical choice. He seems to be a spiritual on-field leader, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out this week.
It's good luck.
One of the interesting things is clubs tend to have this idea that they need to put a captain in place who's going to be there for the next 3 or 4 years. Why not just let a captain be a captain until he can't play anymore? Like Callum Ward was a pretty good captain, wasn't he?
Absolutely.
He was, yeah.
And I'm trying to compare it in part to in cricket where generally batsmen are the skippers of a test side, for instance, but being the leader, being the captain, it affects their form and it doesn't always bode well. And I know Steve Smith's got his issues there at the moment, and we wonder whether he's going to get back. But do you pick a captain under those circumstances who you know tactically is very good, but maybe it doesn't always suit his game? And in Cornelio's case, perhaps it's one where go and kick goals, go and get 30 touches a game and not worry about that other element.
We haven't seen his best form as the captain yet. Toby Green, it certainly hasn't it hasn't hindered him at all. In fact, it's helped him.
New level.
That's my point.
And you know what? The thing about Cornelio, there's people saying Cornelio should be traded. Cornelio needs.
Yeah, they should trade him to Hawthorn, Duff.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, well,
if
Josh Kelly goes, let's face it, they're going to need Stephen Cornelio running around the midfield. And if Josh Kelly goes, they can go to their player group and they can say, we have the bloke to take Josh Kelly's place. Here he is, Stephen Cornelio, A-grade midfielder, guy who goes forward and kicks goals, guy who kicks both feet, delivers the ball well. So they need him. They need him. They need him to stay.
Well, he's long-term contract.
Yep.
He's not going anywhere, so.
Okay, so let's say the captain isn't picked by the players but is picked by Golden Tonsil, Small Hands and Son of a Darkened Shearer. Who is the captain of GWS next year?
Toby Green.
Yeah, well, I think results suggest Toby Green, but it's far more complicated than just than what we're saying.
I don't think it is.
Well, I think we...
Are you saying we're indulging in some fingernail deep analysis?
No, not at all. I think it's a really interesting conversation to have and they're all valid arguments. I just think when you strip it back, there's too many pluses as with him as captain to ignore.
Yeah, I just wonder what effect that would have on Cornelio as his commitment to the club.
I don't know. Be surprised. He might be happy to relinquish.
And you know what? Toby Green might be happy to go back to doing what he's doing.
I don't think so. I don't think he likes it.
I'd say Toby Green myself. If I was picking it, it would be Toby Green. All right, Collingwood versus Carlton, MCG on Sunday. Carlton is $1.88, Collingwood $1.96. With Tab Touch, boys, who are we tipping?
Well, I'm picking the Blues. And I know you won't, Skeeter. I'm predicting you won't. But Collingwood's great finish last week, 7 goals in the last quarter, getting over the top of Richmond at the moment. That's probably, I don't know if that's a big deal at the moment. Carlton, I know they've been so inconsistent this year, and last year probably would have won if not for their inaccurate kicking last week. I keep looking at that side. You look at Walsh, you look at Mackay, you look at Wiedering.
Got some weapons, haven't
there's they? There's some upside for them coming. And we've been waiting for it and it hasn't arrived yet, but I just think this is a week where they can get over Collingwood.
And Darcy Moore's absence for the rest of the season.
Well, it hasn't hurt them so far.
No, but against a key forward like Mackay, yeah, that becomes an issue, I would have thought. That being said, I just can't trust Carlton, rain, hail or shine. Mm. And they've beaten the Dockers, as we know, when they probably shouldn't have with 40 inside entries. They are a team that have lost their past five, I think, against Collingwood. Magpies have been pretty good, playing a bit more...
Shackles are off, mate.
Attacking footy through the corridor, trying to... Now, whether that's a product of the season effectively gone and the pressure's off... But listening to some talk about the Magpies, there's certainly no instruction from Nathan Buckley when he was in charge to go slow, but the confidence of players to be able to pull the trigger, to go for that dangerous ball, may not have been there. And perhaps now they realise that they're in a new regime and they've, as you say, loosened the shackles and playing more bravado.
It does help to have Taylor Adams back in the team. He's been missing for a lot of this year. He's
your captain. He's your future captain at Collingwood.
Yeah, when they decide that Scott Pendlebury either is retiring or deserves to just play as a player and not have the responsibility of captaincy, I would have thought Taylor Adams is clearly the next captain.
And what do we get from Jordan McGarry this week?
Well, you tell me.
Quiet week.
A quiet week from Jordan De Gea.
Had an absolute ball terror last week. Therefore, it'll be a quiet week.
All right. I'm going to tip Carlton. You know what? I hear everything that Skeet said, and I think Skeet is absolutely justified in feeling the way he feels. But I did like a lot of what I saw about Carlton last week. I think Wiedering's emerging as a genuine star. I think Sam Walsh has been a genuine star all year. We've talked about Jack Silvani earlier in the week. I'm not sure how the passing of Serge will affect him, but you know, hopefully he plays, and hopefully he plays in honour of his grandfather. There are other players around the ground. I think they're starting to get more out of Paddy Dow. You know, they're starting to get more out of Petrescu Seaton and players like that. There's just a few signs that the worm is turning a little bit at Carlton. Had they kicked straighter, I think they would have severely tested Geelong last week, and hopefully they can kick a bit straighter against Collingwood and get the job done and keep themselves in the finals mix.
Yeah, I think 5-14, which, I mean, we talk about the Dockers all season, they're the sort of numbers that don't win you too many games. So they had plenty of looks last week against the Cats, but yeah, they're a side. Look, I'm sticking with Collingwood for all those reasons Cord has said. I think it's a genuine 50-50 game, and it's up to whether some of those match winners, De Goey, whether it's Walsh, whether it's Mackay, and he, mind you, is no certainty. If you had your life on the line, him kicking 30 out directly in front. I actually mentioned this to Josh Gallup. I said, when it comes to free throws in basketball compared to, say, having a shot on goal in footy, what's the comparison? And Josh, he mentioned maybe 20 metres out directly in front. Well, I'll tell you what, there's a lot of poor free throw shooters in footy.
Yeah, there are.
At Carlton and Fremantle they over the past 6 months.
Yep.
Going Collingwood.
Yep. Absolutely. All right, I'm going to tip Carlton, but only just, I think, as Skeet said, genuine 50-50 game. All right, Sunday, Adelaide Oval at this stage. Adelaide versus West Coast.
Have we gone North Essendon yet? Sorry to keep jumping in. Have we given our North Essendon tips?
That one's not on the app either. So obviously Tab Touch is a bit worried about that one too.
Well, the problem is, see, these games are being moved. This game has been shifted from Marvel Stadium. They're going to be on the plane today up to Queensland. So it's sort of caught us unaware.
All things being equal at Marvel Stadium, it's just an automatic tick for Essendon. It still is for me. But I like what I saw from North, albeit there's a lot of criticism of the West Coast Eagles. They showed a lot of heart.
It's hard to know. The venue and the weather, but if it's up in sunny Queensland, I'm going to pick Essendon to win this one. They're a side that's going to really charge in the next 2-3 years. They'll lose games this year, but they won't lose this one.
I'd be fascinated to see if Jaden Stevenson gets another 35 touches and dominates as he did in the wet and then comes out and makes a couple of interesting statements on Instagram, which he has done and since apologised about the COVID situation being exacerbated or exaggerated by the media. So he's been given a little whack over the head and apologised for that. But he's a player. And Ben Cunnington, wow, just sitting at the ground on Monday night watching him, he was just outstanding. So, look, I just feel that the travel for them, the uncertainty, the move up to Queensland again, Essendon for me, doing enough.
Ben Cunnington, he was like a master conductor, wasn't he? And that was his opus.
Yes, it was. Mind you did say that when Ben says sends holiday snaps, it's about him playing in the rain, not sunning himself on a beach.
That's right.
It's likely to be more sunning yourself on a beach than playing in the rain up there.
Yeah.
I think the other thing, and I think Quarters, you summed it up, or it was one of you two anyway, said the extra flight. The extra flight's going to really hurt them. You know, they've been over here, they've flown back, now they've got to fly again.
2 hours. Yeah, and a young side that, as you expect, a team that's on the bottom of the table.
Yeah, it's a lot of travel.
And a big up of last Monday. That was a huge result for them. Their best result, let's be honest.
And it was a four-quarter slog for them. There was no passengers in that team. It was just, they had to work hard for that.
And the Bombers had, and I had to watch it on Friday night with one eye turned away because it was horrible to watch. Adelaide were terrible.
Mm.
But the Bombers, guys, the young team, had a pretty soft kill, let's be honest. 2 goals, their lowest ever, Adelaide. So Essendon had a pretty soft night at the office. So I think they're primed to keep their momentum going.
Give me your best five North Melbourne young players before we move on.
Well, Zerha, is he classified as a young player still?
Okay.
I think Zerha and Larky have got to be in there.
Absolutely. Those two players automatically.
LDU.
Simpkin, LDU,
yep.
But that's Luke Davies Uniacke, for those who don't know.
Yeah.
And there's
another. Well, Taryn Thomas. Yeah.
That's not bad. That's something to work with, isn't it?
Yeah, and Tarrant into the side, down back. They've got a
good to see him back too.
Yeah, a few players. Look, they're last, and we know they've had some shellackings. Their percentage has been whacked from pillar to post. But there's a few good signs for David Noble. And I actually think he's done a really good job.
Well done to Todd Goldstein too.
Oh yeah,
surpassing Aaron Sandilands' hit-out record. What a good player!
Yes.
What a good player he has been.
And you know what? Had that two, three-year period where he was going to, he may have moved from his club, stayed put through circumstance more than choice, but, and then he hasn't spat the dummy and just faded into nothing. He's actually put a real seal on the end of his career, I reckon.
And he put a seal on the game on Monday night when he pushed forward, and we spoke to Nick Nat yesterday, and I asked him the question directly. I said, you've copped a bit of heat over your decision to stay outside the 50 and not defend on the goal line, and he said, we rolled the dice on the hope that we win it back and then I can get it going back through the middle. But yeah, ordinarily, you'd want Nick Nat or a ruckman to be there to compete against Goldstein, who, of course, effectively iced the game.
I think you have to have someone back there. I think it's inexcusable, and that's why we pay you the big money, mate. You ask the hard questions.
Yeah, well, did you mention the world record number of hit-outs? I think you did.
Yep.
Yeah, it was a great battle. It was great watching those two, because Nick Nat, I thought, was
played really
easily
well.
The Eagles' best.
No, he played really well, and he's great at what he does and has a real influence. It's just this, and I don't expect him to take 12 marks around the ground. That's not his game. And he doesn't go deep in defence for a reason. They've got players who are there. But I just think in that instance, you know, I just think it would have been – the game was on the line.
So let's – like pros and cons. He runs into defence, punches the ball through for a point. Shannon Hearn takes the kick in. That's a pretty good scenario for
absolutely.
West Coast.
Absolutely.
That's the percentage play that most of us thought was
– yeah.
So if you're relying on them to win the ball, get it back to you, you're in the centre, you can – you know, you've got to go to the first option, which is where the ball's been kicked to right at that point.
And you've also got to ask the question, just to butt in, Tom Barras has done his hamstring. We're not talking about this game just yet, but whether he was labouring to get back and provide a contest, they're all questions we're not sure the answer to.
I saw the moment Tommy did his hamstring the other night. It was late in the last quarter. He bravely played on, got to a couple of marking contests after that. So he was definitely one going the extra yard trying to get the result for West Coast. So we're all on Essendon, and I think maybe comfortably, given that everything that North has to cope with to get to this game. All right. Adelaide versus West Coast. We'll try again. Adelaide versus West Coast. Adelaide Oval on Sunday at this stage. West Coast is $1.69. Adelaide is $2.18 with Tab Touch. I'm going to just put it out there. I'm expecting a response.
Oh, gee.
I don't think there has to be a response necessarily. I think Adelaide at the moment is rubbish. And I think West Coast, we saw for about a quarter and a half, we saw something. Mate, they are rubbish at the moment.
No, I'm saying, but West Coast form, they've got the garbage bag ready as well.
I'm not saying they're not rubbish at the moment, but look, there's no synchronicity in that West Coast side, but I think they don't have to do too much right to win this game against a side that is their key weaponry. They're decimated of that as it is, and I think they're a bit like Hawthorn at the moment. You expect them to just peter out towards the end of the season. It's in Adelaide. I don't think that'll hurt West Coast.
They play well there.
Get away, yeah, and also they do. Good record. Get away. Barassa is a big out.
But bear in mind, I was at training yesterday. Tim Kelly went off early with a sore knee, and Elliot Yeo was waiting for scans on his ankle. He didn't look really fit at the end of that North Melbourne game. So not saying they won't play, but I look at this game and think, you're right, on what we've seen, the Eagles are poor and the Adelaide Crows are putrid, as they say, but they should be winning this match.
Now, is Connor West in?
Yes, he'll play.
So we should congratulate him on his AFL debut. The son of Robbie, the
son of
Sandover medalist.
Medalist, played, of course, for West Coast.
So I think that's good, bringing a bit of youth, but and you know, only forced change for the West Coast Eagles this week, which is good. I don't think they can make mass changes at the moment, and good luck to him.
A lot of energy.
You know what? If Yo is really sore, if Kelly isn't 100% fit, Barras is injured, bring in some kids.
Well, they've brought him away. I mean, he looks Sawyo.
You know, the worst case scenario for them is if they take their old established players over there and still lose. That's the worst case scenario. If they take their kids and lose, then they can say, well, we saw Luke Edwards, we saw Harry Edwards, we saw Luke Foley, maybe one or two other, Connor West that you've already mentioned. To me, there's something to take out of that. And if they'd have lost that game to Carlton at the SCG, you would have said, well, they had a lot out. You know, we were tipping Carlton anyway. Take some kids. You don't have to drop any senior names. You're going to have players unavailable or just, you know, not fit enough to run out the game. Put some kids in there, see what happens. I'm going to still tip them because, well, I can't not tip them. I saw Adelaide play on Friday
night.
Yeah,
I'm tipping West Coast, yeah.
The other thing is, Nick Nat, and I asked him the question again, I said, a lot of heat on the club and the form, et cetera, but you are still in the eight. I don't remember many teams copping as much as they have for what they are on the ladder, and they are inside the eight. And you'd think if Shuey and the like get some more time in the middle, not saying they're going to rejuvenate in the space of 2 weeks, but they're in the eight. So why would you plan for 2022 when you're still in the conversation, at least on the ladder?
But we would expect West Coast at some point to play better footy between now and the end of the season.
Absolutely.
It's almost unthinkable that what we've seen over the last 3 weeks is as good as it's going to get for West Coast between now and the end of the season.
We should congratulate Nick Nat too on his 200th game, and we should also congratulate Brody Smith, who's playing his 200th game. Now, he's going to be sporting a big black eye, but it's not from footy.
No, it was. I did hear it this morning. He was playing golf, and he'd played through. He'd finished down the fairway or somewhere, and the group behind him
hit up.
And unfortunately, the ball, luckily, it bounced and then hit him in the eye. Didn't cause serious damage. He's going to sport a black eye on Sunday, but didn't cause major damage. Extraordinarily unlucky, as he said, to be whacked there, but also lucky not to have come out with
didn't
damage.
Didn't King miss a game this year but hit the head with a golf ball?
Yeah.
By a teammate.
You know, I was hit in the head with a golf ball once, which required stitches, just above the eye. True story.
Your own ball?
I wasn't on a golf course. I was at the end of a jetty in Busselton at 3 a.m. catching crabs. True story.
And got hit by a golf ball.
Well, I was with a group of mates.
Honest question.
Was Kramer on the beach somewhere?
No, well, my mates were
a few tightlists.
Well, the guy who got me, Linford Christie, Craig Christie, he's off one at Metropolitan in Melbourne, and it skidded like the magic JFK bullet. Skidded off the jetty, got me in the
magic
head.
Bullet.
Got me in the head.
There's been a couple over there. Remember, was it Josh Kennedy tennis ball inside the Eagles' change rooms going back many years ago?
Yes, it was.
And remember Glenn McGrath before the first second Ashes test.
Probably turned the 2005 series.
Exactly.
And then Ricky Ponting decided to win the toss and bowl. Extraordinarily. Anyway, we love our cricket quarters. But, yeah, that's an unusual accident, but well done to Brody as well, 200 games.
Yes. Been a good player for them.
Been terrific.
And Nick Nat, as you say, Nick Nat is, well, I think he's the greatest tap ruckman in history, and that includes Polly.
Interesting.
Polly had other tricks to his game that Nick Nat doesn't necessarily have, but to me, no one in the history of the game has been able to do what Nick Nat knew he has been able to do. And I always come back to what Phil Smart told me in the lead up to that draft. I think it was the 2008 draft. Nick Nat was taken pick two behind Jack Watts. Poor old Jack Watts. Never lived that one down. I said, let's say you've got the number one pick. And they had the number three pick. Of course, they took Stephen Hill, which was a matter of debate in itself, Stephen Hill versus Daniel Rich. But let's say you've got the number one pick. Who are you taking? He goes, oh, Nat Nui, every day of the week. He said he wins the tap and then he either gets the ball on the ground or he tackles the opposition player who gets the ball. And that's not a bad pricey of what Nick Nat does, really.
That's exactly what he does.
And following that, Dean Cox, 290 games for the West Coast Eagles.
Yep.
200 now for Nick Natanui. At what stage are we saying, or will we ever say, that he...
Different types of ruckman.
And Cox deserve to be spoken of in the same breath.
I think Cox is their best ruckman. I think Nick's a different type of ruckman. I think Duff's pretty well summed it up in terms of the tap ruckman.
I think you can talk about him in the same breath. You can then have the argument as to who's the better player. Mm. I mean, when I always do the pecking order of the West Coast players, I always have Dean Cox very high because until a few weeks ago he was the game's record holder, and he changed the way ruckman played, didn't he? But so was Nick Natanui.
Yep. He has, but I've actually comfortably got Cox ahead. Comfortably at this point.
And bear in mind, we don't know how many years left with Nick, but if he produces another two or three seasons and he's got two All-Australians, premiership obviously is what he wants to grab. But, yeah, it's an interesting discussion as to, at the end of his career, will he be at the same level, regarded as the same level of player of Dean Cox? Either way, both elite.
I'm happy to talk about him in the same conversation. I'm happy to have Nick Natanui in the same conversation as any ruckman to have played the game since Polly.
Then why does he cop so much grief?
Including Polly, you said, which is really, really big.
Well, he's a better tap ruckman than Polly. And Polly was a great tap ruckman, but Polly had other tricks. You know, the handball around the ground. Polly was a beautiful kick. Polly was the architect of so many great plays for Geelong and West Perth and East Perth. And he brought success with him, didn't he, everywhere.
Well, he changed sort of stoppages, didn't he? I mean, it went from the days where you just really were a big lumbering tap ruckman. And that's not being unkind. There have been many great ruckmen for Western Australia before him. And since. But he really revolutionised it. And you're right, I guess Nick Nat has revolutionised it in a different way.
You know what? When Hawthorn managed to nut West Coast in 2015, their rule was that they didn't believe their ruckman could compete with Nick Natanui. And the rule was when the ball was hit by Nick Natanui, wherever it was hit, it had to hit the ground before it left the centre square. So they were basically conceding that, A, it was going to be hit and it was going to be hit in the general direction of a West Coast midfielder, but their rule was there had to be sufficient physical pressure on that West Coast midfielder that the ball hit the ground before it left the centre square. That was how defensive they got, and it worked for them. Mm. And the worry for West Coast with Nick Natanui is always that their midfielders get so confident of the sort of service they're going to get from Nick, that they start trying to do drive-by clearances and they lose their structure and their ability to defend it if it goes the other way. And what happens is we see some of the great highlights where West Coast march it out of the front end of the square, but if you go on the game in its entirety, you'll see times when they lose their structure and get too offensive and the ball goes the other way. And we saw that a little bit against North Melbourne on Monday night.
That being said, Nick still cops a lot of criticism, rightly or wrongly. If you had the choice over the next 12 months to have Nick Nat as your number one ruckman or Max Gawn or any other ruckman in the competition, who are you choosing?
It depends on your midfield. But on your midfield mix, I guess you'd have to say Nick Nat in terms of what he does, how he brings the other players in. But I'm going to add Sean Darcy in there.
Yeah.
In terms of what the influence around the ground. It depends what sort of a ruckman you're after. That's my answer.
If you use the theory that you can't win the contest if you can't get to the contest, I'm probably going Gawn. The footage that Kane Corn showed on the AFL website on Monday where Gawn was running 100 metres to man up Charlie Dixon so that Stephen May could get off the chain as the intercept defender, Nick can't do that. No. You know, like he physically can't do that. You can ask him to do that, but he doesn't have the tank to do that. Max Gawn can ruck most of the game. Nick can't. Max can get around the ground better than Nick, and he's still a very good tap ruckman, very good pack mark. I think he brings a few more things to the table. But if we talk about the original role of a ruckman, which is to win the knock to your midfield advantage, he's unparalleled in the history of the game, Nick Natanui.
Yeah, clearly number one in that area. And as you said, Quarters and Duff, they both and other ruckmen bring different facets to the game. Nick's quite special, and I'll tell you what, he's worth a fair bit to the football club on and off the field.
All right, let's move on to everybody's favourite segment.
Hello, Newman.
When you control the mail, you control information.
Josh's mailbag.
I was just laughing because I got 2 out of 9 last week. And I did laugh at Jordan McArdle in the West tipping North Melbourne and said, "You silly young man."
Yeah.
To myself, I said that. And now I'm saying it publicly. Yeah. You are a genius, Jordan McArdle.
Those words haven't been uttered too many times, John McCullough being genius. A bit of a light mailbag, which is a bit of a change, guys, but all the emails, though, have been very good. Let's start with Matt George from Bridgetown. Now, Matt George has requested some bluegrass. for his. Now, I don't know what song.
Oh, yeah, the Blues Festival.
Hello? All right, great.
That's Quarters Domain. Don't worry about that. He's just a bit out there.
Bridgetown. Righto. Isn't it great that no big Melbourne club is in the eight? Refreshing, in my opinion. Secondly, a trip down the ladder could be a godsend for the likes of Richmond and West Coast regarding the favourable draw in the following year. Remember, the Hawks snagged a top four berth in 2018 due to that reason. So I can't agree with anyone saying time is up for the two best sides since 2015, with the draw dictates finishing position far greater than people like to lean on. What are your thoughts?
I tend to think Richmond will come again in some form next year. Whether they win the flag or not, please keep that going. I love that music, Josh. Whether they win a flag or not, it's another point, but I think they'll come hard next year at some stage, Richmond. And I don't know if I could say the same about West Coast.
Well, they're better placed draft-wise, aren't they, with what they've got on the table at the moment. They've got a pretty good draft selection at their hands.
Richmond?
Heading into 2022, as opposed to West Coast. I think West Coast took their first rounder in the back pocket.
I think West Coast have got a number of picks in the top 40, but not necessarily absolute top-end picks.
Yeah, and the point, I guess, our correspondent was making was the draw becomes a bit easier the lower you finish. But for me, it's all about what are they able to go to the draft with? That's a nice little banjo accompaniment.
Nice little change of tempo there.
Welcome aboard, Scott.
Thank you. Do you agree, Duff? I mean, Richmond, theoretically, have those draft picks to go again.
Yeah, I'm not right. Like I said a couple of weeks ago, put a fork in Richmond, they're done. But I'm basically meaning this year. I think Richmond are capable of getting back in the mix next year. I think West Coast are too. If we're not talking about Geelong as too old, surely West Coast isn't too old. We both expect Josh Kennedy, or we all expect Josh Kennedy and Shannon Hearn to go on next year because they're playing well enough to. And we also expect there's no great need to flood the first team with kids because they don't have the kids to flood the first team with. So we've, you know, in our previous discussion about the game this weekend, we've talked about the ones who can basically come in, haven't we? And they've introduced Josh Rotham permanently this year, which has been, I think, a good move on the whole. He had a few missed kicks on Monday night, but, you know, he was also trying to take the game
on.
Wasn't
the Lone Ranger either.
Luke Foley has been, you know, has shown a bit. Luke Edwards has shown a bit. Harry Edwards has shown a bit. We expect Bailey Williams to come on stream at some stage. I think they'll manage Josh Kennedy differently next year so they could get another season, productive season out of Josh Kennedy while he's probably not going to be playing every game. They may even rest Nick Natanui a few weeks next year, which means their ruck structure will change and, you know, we might see someone like Vardy play a little bit more because they'll be able to play Vardy and Bailey Williams. So all those things are possible.
Yeah. I mean, Braden Ainsworth, for instance, I'm just not sure he's shown me enough over the past few years to suggest he's going to break into that side immediately. And again, Jared Brander, what are they going to do with him? What's his role? I still think that question mark is against his name, albeit he's played some good footy at times this year.
And what is his trade value if they decide?
That's the point I'd make. What is his trade value? You can get something in, I think, for him.
But you can't when he's running around the waffle quarters. Like, if Jared Brander is a fourth-year AFL player running around in the waffle and you say, well, he was a first-round draft pick, we want a first-round draft pick, you're going to get laughed at. So
we'll play him.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe he needs to play a bit between now and the end of the season.
Slightly different subject. I was speaking to Lee Spur before the waffle coverage the other week, or last weekend, and he said to me, he's speaking to a player manager, and obviously once you're drafted, the first 2 years you're on that salary. He said, after that, irrespective of how many matches you've played or how well you're going, most player managers and players they're attached to, they're looking at a contract of around $400,000. That staggers me.
For a third-year footballer?
Yeah, for a third-year footballer.
Not in relative terms.
But if you've played one game of footy or 10, I mean, it just feels like that's a big number for a player potentially that hasn't done a lot, but maybe that's the...
It's the market value though these days, mate. That's the median price.
It's an interesting one where you look at the structure of West Coast list where they've got a lot of highly paid players. If you look at our top 100 or our rich 100 that we ran a week or so ago, they had a lot of players in the top 40. So therefore, there must be players who are playing regular senior footy at West Coast who aren't getting $400,000 a year.
Getting squeezed, absolutely. It was just interesting. I didn't know those numbers and... Maybe I'm a lone ranger there thinking that's pretty good money potentially for a player if they haven't developed in those 2 years to the degree that clubs would like.
But I think correspondent makes a really good point. They will get a softer draw next year and they are both capable of playing powerful footy. Incidentally, my most prolonged experience with Bridgetown was the 1980 Warren Blackwood Marathon, which, and I was doing the run leg. It's a five-leg marathon relay.
How many Ks is that for you?
That's 12 Ks straight up the hill out of Boyett Brook. I had to run against Robert Di Castella.
Did you?
Yeah, look at Cliffy Young in the corner here just chuckling away.
And
I beat Jebra Selassie once in a marathon.
I did it in about 55 minutes, the 12 Ks, and Deeks did it in 26 minutes. And I met him. He ran out and then he ran back in.
Yeah, of course.
And I met him and I was about two-thirds of the way out and I'm just about expiring.
And he was holding a cup of tea and a saucer.
I'd had a few bush chooks the night before, I have to say. And
still a pretty good time, mate, for 12 Ks if you're going up a hill.
And he said to me, "Don't worry, mate, you'll make it." He was barely out of breath.
Yeah, Quarters and I did a half marathon last November. He carried me for a fair portion of it. We just plodded along the river, didn't we, Quarters?
It was just a nice little amble.
And our female companion who was running, I think, beat us by about 30 minutes, but she's about 20 years younger. Oh, no, she's not. She's about 3 years younger. But
don't say that, Nick. I hate that. Hey, and I did beat Jebra Selassie once. It was a DNF for him, but I still beat him in the New York Marathon. He was about 2 hours ahead of me when his knee went, but still, as I ran past, I said, "Have you had enough? Or do you want some more?"
Oh, did you run the New York Marathon?
Okay.
He's run 18, I think. Get some of that into you, mate, you would have said.
Seeing that take us away. Okay, I've had enough bluegrass for the day. Thank you very much for the email. For those not following on at home, Cordis is about five different periods of his life that he likes to bring up, which I quite enjoy.
Okay.
But I'd like to stir the pot and say, "Oh, did you live in London?" Because he's often starts a story by, "When I was in London."
Time to move on now, Josh.
Sorry. All right, we've got two more emails and we'll get you guys out of here. Caleb from Broome.
Oh, we wish. We only wish. That's a bit rough.
Oh, it's, yeah,
maybe an aeroplane would have been sufficient.
Yeah, God willing, we'd be up in Broome. Hey, boys, I've always had an issue with how we record free kicks. Considering that frees are given for plays such as deliberate out of bounds and a dangerous tackle, does it not seem odd we record it as a good play, like holding, holding the ball for a free kick? I haven't worded this great, but it just seems weird how we call for heads when the free kick differential is drastic, when one team can be tackling with intent and another team can be given softer free kicks. Curious to see what the boys think. Also, if we should record frees for forward half or back half when the team receives the free.
Are you saying calling for heads in terms of the umpires or the players? I'm not sure if we give it that much credence. I mean, you're talking about maybe you could differentiate personal freeze and team freeze or something like that, but I don't really. Does it bother you much, Skeet?
I never thought of it, to be honest with you. Never crossed my mind, but it's, you know, that's the beauty of this sort of podcast. Your respondents come in with ideas and suggestions we haven't.
I suppose you're saying when maybe pundits look at the free kicks and goes, "Look at the free kicks, it's so skewed one way," but when you can look at a natural game, it potentially could be all for, you know, out of bounds on the floor and stuff like that.
Yep.
Let's move on. Final one today. Trent Erickson messaged through to my Instagram. That was an albeit roundabout way. He said, "Hey,
Trent,
Josh, Trent's from Perth."
Okay.
And he said, "What do you guys think about Eagles' best win against Richmond? A fantastic win. 2 days later, Willy Rioli returns, and then there's three bad performances. Do you read anything into a return, or is that too much
credit?" People keep bringing this up. Oh, I don't think so. I mean, I'm not inside the club, so it's hard for me to answer, but this keeps getting brought up.
Never heard it before.
I've been asked this many times. Yeah, look, they're big boys. Surely that doesn't affect them too much, and why would it? I mean, I'd like to see Willy back in that side. We all have our views on what the punishment should have been, how long it should have been, whether he should play this year. But beyond, he's able to play this year. He's back in the group. Just come on, you big boys. I don't think that's affected.
I'd be staggered if that had any impact on their three losses. What I saw, particularly in the home games, was just a lack of appetite and willingness to work, which how that is related to Willy Rioli is beyond me.
If that has affected them, I think a few letters, HTFU.
Yeah, okay, I've got you.
Shorten,
I think harden up.
Shorten to harden up. He hasn't played yet. We don't know whether he'll be allowed to play this year by the club. They may say you're just going to run around the waffle. All that's to be decided. If that's going to affect you, seriously?
I don't think it has.
I don't think it has either. I think Willy Rioli is a valued member of the West Coast playing group. They do not underestimate his role in the 2018 flag. I think they view Willy as a person they would love to get back and fully fit and firing for the 2022 season. And if they get any footy out of him this season, it's a bonus. And I also think Willy Rioli has done the crime and done the time.
Agree.
So therefore, let's just move on. He's come back a little bit overweight. He's got 8 weeks to get himself into shape. We'll see what he's like at the end of that 8 week period. We'll see what they're like at the end of that 8 week period. I don't think that's got anything to do with the way they're playing.
No.
I think it's got more to do with other underdone players that have great names, but they've come back at the same time and the team is literally short of a gallop.
And Duff's just given me another acronym which I hadn't heard of, HTFU, and there was one last week when I read about Ben Simmons with his girlfriend at Wimbledon. And in the article in the Herald Sun, it said PDA, and I had to ask exactly what that meant. And I'm sure you, learned gentlemen, know exactly what PDA means.
No.
No?
No.
Thank goodness. Josh will definitely know, being generation whatever
it,
you are.
Is it for this podcast?
It is for us, absolutely.
It's a public display of affection. It's how you and I, or potentially me and Skeet, act around the office, you know. Just
a PDA. So I had no idea, and I had to ask one of the journalists in there. I said, does this something I... Anyway, we talk about acronyms. That was one, and so's Duff, and Duff's one probably has more relevance to this podcast.
Okay, AMF Yo-Yo, which is not for this podcast. Yeah. Okay. I'll tell you off air. I'll let listeners guess.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us today. We have been brought to you by Tab Touch. Get closer to the AFL action with Tab Touch. Please gamble responsibly. Please call Gambler's Help on 1800 858 858. And we've also been brought to you by the Biggie Juice, juicy topic of the week, courtesy of Thirsty Camel Bottle Shops.
SYL. See you later.
If you're a fan of the podcast, why don't you send a message to Josh's mailbag? Have you figured out how to fix footy? Are you trying to settle a debate with a mate? Or maybe you just want two of Australia's most experienced footy journalists to turn their attention to an AFL issue of the week. Send to the mailbag at josh.garlep, that's G-A-R-L-E-P-P, at wanews.com.au. And also remember to like, subscribe, and of course, tell your mates so we can make this as big and as good as possible. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast on the game.